Happy Sunday to everybody. We are finishing up 1 Corinthians chapter 7 today, so I invite you to turn along with us. We'll begin in verse 17. Only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him, and which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. Was anyone at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. For neither circumcision counts for anything, nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. Were you a bondservant when called? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. For he who is called in the Lord as a bondservant is a freedman of the Lord. Likewise, he who is free when called is a bondservant of Christ. You were bought with a price. Do not become bondservants of men. So, brothers, in whatever condition each was called, there let him remain with God. Now concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. This is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none. Let those who mourn as though they were not mourning. Those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing. Those who buy as though they had no goods. And those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it. For the present form of this world is passing away. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things, not to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks that he is not behaving properly towards his betrothed, if his passions are strong, and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let them marry. It is no sin. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, being under no necessity but having his desire under control, and is determined this in his heart, to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So then he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Yet, in my judgment, she is happier if she remains as she is, and I think that I too have the Spirit of God. So last week, we saw Paul teach this principle that he states in the first verse of our reading today. So we overlapped with last week's reading. Last week, we finished with verse 17, and this week, we're beginning with verse 17. The principle is this: only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him, and to which God has called him. Paul says, this is my rule in all the churches. All right, this is a universal principle that all Christians are to live by. Now, we saw Paul frame this in terms of gifts last week. And so we said last week that we should consider every circumstance in terms of the accompanying gifts. That kind of works in, before and after, right? It works in both directions, meaning there are certain gifts that make a certain lifestyle possible, right? And there are certain gifts that result from a certain lifestyle. What Paul invites us to do is to consider the gifts. That's why he has laid out, earlier in the chapter, if you're unmarried, if you're widowed, if you're married to a believer, if you're married to a non-believer, here's the ideal of how that plays out. Here's what you can get out of that. But here are some circumstances you might need to look for to signal that maybe you need to change things. All right, so he lays out ideals and exceptions all along the way. And it's all basically in terms of gifts. It requires us to use discernment in gauging our circumstances. Right, so there's not necessarily like a one-size-fits-all rule for that. The rule is that we should prefer to lead the life that the Lord has assigned to us. So if we find our gifts suited for the situation that we're in, we should stay in that situation. Right? There's no reason for us to change our situation just for the sake of change. So we saw how Paul went through all those different circumstances, walked us through the process of discerning in each of those situations. Well, in our text today, Paul continues to express that preference for staying in whatever circumstances we are in. And the points that we made from last week's text are all still relevant for this week's text, especially as we're going to look at some more marital circumstances today, particularly, you know, engagement or betrothal, and things of that nature. Also a commitment to celibacy. But Paul is going to broaden this discussion out to include things outside of marital status. Right? He's going to show us that this is a bigger principle than just marriage versus not marriage, and all of the other different permutations of that that we've looked at. This is a principle that should guide us in every circumstance of our lives. And so he's going to get to the root of this question in all of this. What should a Christian expect to get out of a change in status or circumstance, whether we're talking about marriage or talking about anything else? So Paul broadens this principle out to include even the most intimate and defining situations in our lives. Right, and marriage, of course, is highly intimate and highly defining for a person's life. But Paul says, you know, on that same level, you can consider things like circumcision or slavery. Right? Now, he's not changing subjects here. Right? If you're just kind of casually browsing through 1 Corinthians 7 and you hit this point, you think, wait a minute, what does circumcision and slavery have to do with marriage? Well, Paul's coming back around to marriage, right? We've read the text. We know where he's going with this. But he brings up these two things, circumcision and slavery, to show us just how all-encompassing this principle is. Right, remember, circumcision is a huge deal if you're a Jew. It's a major part of who you are. It's an identity marker. Circumcision is not just some casual thing in antiquity. I think it's considerably more so today, since most circumcisions are performed for medical reasons. But remember, to the audience that Paul is writing to, this is a really, at least what they would consider to be an important and key detail about who they are. Right? Your status, likewise, is a huge, huge deal in antiquity, especially if you are a slave, because that means you are at the bottom of society. You have practically no rights, no privileges. Everybody else in society is superior to you. And from an ancient perspective, your status really defines and dictates who you are. Highly, highly, highly important thing. From the world's perspective, all of these things dictate who you are. Not just your social status, you know, what class you belong to or what caste you belong to, but, you know, religious markers like circumcision or things like marital status. These are all highly important. They define who you are. What Paul says is that the cross radically changes all of that, whereas the world looks at all of those things as defining. The cross looks at them differently. Like, the cross puts itself in that defining role. Right? It ejects marital status and social status and other forms of marks and identity. It ejects all of those things, because the only really essential thing that defines who you are is the cross. So in one sense, none of these things, marital status, circumcision, uncircumcision, slavery, freed status, these things do not matter under the cross in a very important sense, right? In terms of a person's salvation, those things are entirely irrelevant. It doesn't matter one bit whether a person is circumcised, uncircumcised, slave, free, married, divorced, widowed, never married. Everyone has the same access to salvation through Jesus Christ, because the cross is the thing. Now, Paul draws a conclusion from that fact that we'll come to in a second, but everything in Christian life, everything, including these things that the world would say, you know, are supposed to orient you, actually those things themselves get reoriented according to the pattern of the cross. So in terms of a person's, you know, spirituality, these kinds of status indicators, they or these differences in status, only matter, quote-unquote, in a very narrow sense. Because everything is oriented towards the cross, all of these different kinds of status, again, are reoriented towards the cross. Instead of marriage telling you who you are, the cross tells you what marriage is. Right? Instead of your social class, you know, including even your status as a slave, if you are a slave, instead of that telling you who you are, it's the cross that defines who you are and what your slavery means relative to the cross. All of it, circumcision, slavery, marriage, everything means something different under the cross than it means in the eyes of the world. So in absolute terms, everyone is still called to remain loyal to Christ, regardless of their condition, right? A married freedman is just as much responsible for maintaining loyalty to Christ as is a single, a celibate slave. But the way that you live out that loyalty to Jesus Christ is going to look a little bit different depending on your situation in life, mainly just in practical terms. The obligation is still there, but the difference in status really just amounts to practical changes in how that loyalty is lived out. So in terms of a person's spirituality, that's really the only way in which these different kinds of status matter at all, or have any relevance at all in the spiritual life of a Christian. Now, Paul's conclusion from all of this is that it does not matter what situation you are in. No situation in life is going to change your status as a child of God. No situation in life is going to change your loyalties. It's not going to change your status as a Christian. Now, to the point, one situation, you know, any given situation in life is not going to make you somehow more spiritual compared to other situations in life, at least not in and of itself. And so the point is, we should stop obsessing over these kinds of status, over our situations in life. We shouldn't give these things more weight than they deserve. Now, that's not to say that Paul is forbidding people from changing their situations. In fact, he says that repeatedly over the course of this chapter, where he lays out circumstances in which a change is acceptable or even preferable or necessary. Look, for example, at what he says to slaves. Right? If you can get your freedom, get it. You know, by all means, avail yourself of that opportunity. Changing things is fine. We just need to keep things in perspective. We need to understand that a change in status really does not mean anything in terms of the cross. Right? We change our worldly status, but in terms of our faith, nothing has changed. Now, to be clear, and this is kind of an aside, but to be clear, Paul is not justifying slavery here. Right? He's speaking to people who find themselves in that situation, who are enslaved. He's not justifying the people who put them in that situation. he's telling them, and this is meant to be a comfort, that horrible circumstance in their life does not make them any less under the cross. It doesn't make them, you know, they might be, I mean, we can't even say second-class citizens. I mean, they're not even citizens, right? They are last place, right? But so in terms of the world, they are last place. Not so under the cross. They're not even second-class citizens under the cross. They are fellow citizens of equal standing with everyone who stands under the cross. That's the sense of what Paul is getting at here. And it just goes to show how all-encompassing this situation is, this principle is. It does not matter what your situation is. And so don't give it more weight than it is due. Likewise, here at the end of the chapter, we have seen, well, really over the course of the whole chapter, we've seen Paul's instructions concerning marital status. There are sometimes reasons to change things. That's fine. Paul says in our reading today, for example, you know, look, if you want to get married, get married. It's no sin. We just need to understand, again, that the change does not mean anything in terms of the cross. It's something that we sometimes miss in the churches. We act like it means more than it really does. This might sound odd, but I think sometimes in the churches we give marriage more spiritual weight than the Bible gives it, right? So that, like, unmarried people are somehow second-class Christians. Again, in this reading of 1 Corinthians 7, that's just right out, right? There's no such thing as a second-class Christian. You know, if somebody chooses to remain single or then celibate their whole life, that does not change their standing under the cross. Same thing goes, by the way, for having children or choosing not to have children. That, you know, Paul doesn't mention that explicitly at any point in this chapter. But that's certain that that's something that we put a lot of spiritual weight on that the scriptures don't necessarily put weight on. Right now, there are times where we should be weighing those sorts of things, right? Like the qualifications for elders. Right? But that's one thing, right? That's the qualifications for elders. We're talking about our status under the cross. And all of those things, married, single, you know, lifelong celibate, divorced, widowed, is irrelevant for your status under the cross. And so the point of all of that is that we shouldn't go looking for these kinds of changes, thinking that we're going to somehow improve our spiritual standing. And again, we shouldn't look down on others as if their status somehow puts them at a lower spiritual level than we are at. Now, in talking about the central principle of this chapter, we have really only considered the negative aspect of things. What we are not to do. We're not supposed to obsess over our earthly status. We're not to seek unnecessary changes in status. We've not really talked about the positive aspect of it. We've hinted at it a little bit. In today's reading, Paul explicitly gives us the positive half of that teaching, what we are supposed to do. It's what we find in verse 19. All right, as he's talking about circumcision, he says, "Neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God." Now, Paul applies this idea across the board in chapter 7. He immediately applies that idea to slavery. All right, "For he who was called in the Lord as a bondservant is a freedman of the Lord. Likewise, he who is free when called is a bondservant of Christ." The point is, both equally belong to Christ. Their worldly status does not change their status relative to Christ. It doesn't change their obligations. Right? We belong to Christ. That obligates us. And so Paul ultimately brings this point back around to marriage, right? That the important thing is obedience, keeping the commandments of God. Now, the world puts us up against a lot of trials. The adversary is constantly tempting us to not keep the commandments of God. And these concerns about status are all part of that. What Paul says, and he gives this as advice, right? He explicitly says he's not giving this as a commandment, but just as one who is trustworthy. He says, I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Now note, he doesn't just say here, it's best to stay single. That's not what he's saying. He says, remain as you are. Are you bound to a wife? He asks. He says, don't seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Don't seek a wife. Right, it runs in both directions. Whatever your status is, Paul advises that you keep it as a way of holding to the commandments of God. That's because our spiritual struggle in this world, again, ultimately doesn't depend on our status. We need to, you know, to realign our thinking on that. Right? We need to be focused more on that struggle with sin than we are with these questions of status and, you know, what's it mean that I'm in this situation? You know, why can't I find a girlfriend? Why can't I find a husband? Why can't we have more children? Those kinds of things. We need to keep our eyes on what's important. Look at the way that Paul frames this. You look in verses 29 through 31. He says, this is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. All right? Looking to the end. Looking to the goal. Right? With heaven, with eternity in mind. He says, from now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none. Those who mourn as though they were not mourning. Those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing. Those who buy as though they had no goods. Those who deal with the world as if they had no dealings with it. The present form of this world is passing away. The meaning is that none of those situations has any bearing on one's standing before God or their conduct in the face of struggles. Right, that obedience before God, preparing for that eternal home, that's the essential thing. So all of that is to say that Paul just wants us to keep our priorities straight and not give worldly things more gravity than they are due. Now, that is not to say that Paul doesn't have advice and a preference himself as to which way it would be better for a person to go. As we're striving to keep the commandments of God in the midst of worldly strife, Paul says, well, look, there are certain things about married life that can be a hindrance. That's his point in the final verses of this chapter. He says, I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord. How to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, like how to please his wife. His interests are divided. The unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint on you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. All right, so we need to note here, Paul is giving these as caveats, not as certainties, and certainly not as commandments. All right, so he's, you just look at the way that he concludes this passage. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint on you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. It goes back to that principle. Right, neither circumcision is anything nor uncircumcision, but following the commandments of God. You'll have to excuse me. I feel like I have a sneeze coming on. He says, what matters is following the commandments of God, obedience to the Lord, loyalty to the Lord. And he keeps coming back around to that. I'm not laying a restraint on you. I just want to promote good order. I want to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. So he's giving us his advice here. He's telling us what can happen. Again, he's not laying these out as certainties either. Right? It kind of sounds that way in English. But you look at the whole argument of the chapter and the way that he has brought in all of these different options for living. Again, married, unmarried. You know, you could be married to a believing spouse, married to an unbelieving spouse. You could be circumcised, uncircumcised, slave, free. You could be betrothed. You know, you could be dedicated to the celibate life. There are all kinds of options, he says. And he brings them all under the cross. He says these are all valid under the cross. These all have gifts under the cross. All of these can, you know, point you to obedience to God's commandments. What he's giving here is a caveat. Here's something to watch out for, to be careful of. It's a warning for those of us who are married and for those of us who are considering marriage that there are things about marriage that may tempt you into a greater entanglement with the world than you ought to be in if you're not conducting your life after the pattern of the cross, right? It possibly introduces lots of worldly concerns. And anybody who has had a spouse and children, or even, again, just a spouse, knows that things change, right? New concerns come in. And it's not just, you know, keeping your husband or your wife happy. That's not all that Paul is talking about when he says, you know, that these people are worried about how to please their wife or how to please their husband. There are all kinds of concerns that attend that. And the same goes for whenever you introduce children into the scene. And you think about the shape of this whole chapter. Even these questions of what does my status say about who I am? You know, the whole, again, whether we're talking marital status, circumcision, slavery, any of that. Paul says just that question in and of itself can serve as a distraction to get you to thinking in worldly ways about worldly things. And so it shouldn't surprise us that even marriage, you know, blessed and sanctified by God, ordained by God at the very beginning, that even marriage, if we are not, you know, living our lives after the pattern of the cross, even marriage can lead to deeper, you know, inappropriate entanglements with worldly concerns. It's not meant to discourage marriage, but to promote the benefits of celibacy. And we need to keep those things distinguished in our minds, by the way. That whenever Paul is doing one thing, that doesn't necessarily mean he's doing the other thing, right? So saying, well, this is what makes celibacy good, is not to say this is what makes marriage bad. He's warning us of potentials, you know, things that can happen in the married life, and he does use that to promote the celibate life. So look, those are things you wouldn't have to worry about. Now, does that mean that there's no opportunity for worldly entanglement as a single celibate person? I don't know. Have you paid any attention to single people in the 21st century? They're just as entangled as the rest of us. Again, what Paul is showing us here is the potential of things. Because, look, Paul has been at pains in this chapter to say, look, if you marry, that's good. Right? Married people shouldn't act like unmarried people. That was our very first message from this chapter. If you're married, don't pretend like you're not married. And Paul reminds us this, all of this depends on the gifts that you have received from God. Especially in this case, the gift of celibacy, which not everyone has. It doesn't mean that you are a better or worse person if you have it or don't have it. It just shapes the direction of your life. Right? This is what Paul says. If anyone thinks that he's not behaving properly towards his betrothed, if his passions are strong, and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let him marry. It's no sin. Now, remember, in antiquity, betrothal is different than it is today, right? You might ask, well, why would somebody even try to commit to lifelong engagement? Like, this just doesn't even make any sense. Remember, in antiquity, betrothal is itself a legal arrangement, and if you want to break off a betrothal, that requires a divorce, right? Not the same, biblically speaking, it's not the same as divorcing your wife or your husband. All right, if you break off a betrothal, you know, of course you are at liberty to, to become betrothed to someone else and to marry someone else, if that's what happens. But in antiquity, betrothal is formal, and if that puts you on the hook, particularly if you're the man in that situation. You're on the hook for providing for the material needs of the person you're betrothed to. It makes sense in a Christian context in antiquity for someone who is betrothed to say, you know what, now I think about it, I really could do without marriage. I don't need to have sex. I can be celibate. This, you know, I'm not lusting after anybody. I'm not lusting after my betrothed. Let's just keep doing this, you know. And again, it makes sense from a Christian perspective for a man to continue giving of himself materially, to be materially responsible for a woman that he's not going to have any kind of, he's not going to receive any sexual reciprocation from that. That's how you would end up having people in this circumstance. But look at the way that Paul frames this whole thing, right? Maybe you've got that in your head as an ideal, but maybe you're fooling yourself, right? If Paul says, if his passions are strong, as if you're the engaged guy in this circumstance, and you're really not celibate, like you're not celibate in the sense that you don't have the gift of celibacy, get married. That's like, you know, we shouldn't have to, you know, pull legs here. Paul says, let them marry. It's no sin. We're back to considering what we talked about last week. The gifts that accompany each calling. Paul's not saying that marriage is a concession or that marriage is second best. He's saying it's second best if you have the gift of celibacy. Because the gift of celibacy comes with benefits for keeping the commandments of God. Right? And again, that's what we have to keep coming back to. It's all about keeping the commandments of God. Being entirely, you know, giving your undivided loyalty to the Lord. And so if you're celibate, you know, you've got that opportunity, live that way. Right? But on the flip side, if you don't have the gift of celibacy, well, look, it's hard to keep God's commandments if you're constantly struggling with sexual temptation. Right? You're setting yourself up for failure. You're making things harder on yourself. And the whole point of all of this is that you shouldn't do that. Because you're not gaining anything spiritually by doing that. The end of all of this is to say, just use your head a little. Right? Quit being hung up on worldly expectations about the relative virtues of marriage or celibacy or whatever, or any other kind of status, right? And just as a parting word, I'll note sometimes we in the churches don't make this particularly easy on people. If you know, I do not envy single women in the churches, right? Because they've constantly got the matchmaker at their back, right? You know, we need to be careful in the churches how we treat these things. That we as a church don't wind up in the Corinthian situation where we are importing these worldly concerns and these worldly expectations into the church, dressing them up like they're the wisdom of God, because it just sets people up for failure, for having a hard time, for losing focus, losing sight of what all of this is about: undivided loyalty to the Lord. So I want to thank you all for joining us this week, and I hope, as always, that the message has been encouraging and enlightening, because in everything, you know, we seek to follow the pattern of the cross of Christ. And so we ask today, are you a Christian? Are you following the pattern of Christ's cross? If you are not a Christian, we invite you to find a Church of Christ near you. If you're in the St. Petersburg, Florida area, we invite you to come see us, the 14th Avenue Church of Christ. And wherever you go, you know, we are happy to study the Word with you, to study the way of Jesus with you, to show you what the pattern of the cross looks like. And we encourage everyone to commit to undivided loyalty to the Lord. Believe in the good news of Jesus. Repent of your sins. Confess that Jesus is Lord and be baptized into his death, burial, and resurrection for the remission of your sins. Again, we thank everyone for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next week as we jump into 1 Corinthians chapter 8 concerning meat sacrificed to idols. We look forward to seeing you then. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.